Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the largest and fastest growing segment of society. To those of you who have come to realize that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, rotten to the core, and counterproductive. I'm Yada. If you would like to join us anytime over the next couple of hours, you're invited to do so. Our toll-free number is 877-300-7645. You know, there are lots of reasons to be opposed to the teachers union. If it's not the largest union in America, it is certainly among them. Personally, I don't think it should be allowed. I don't think there should be any union allowed for government employees. And teachers are government employees. Whether they be county, city, state, or federal. If you want to go and work for the government, then you ought not have a negotiating apparatus. The decider ought to be the citizens of that community. And right now, we are so out of whack with unionized government workers that private sector workers, whose jobs are much more difficult, who take much greater risks, are paid far less and receive far inferior pension and health care benefits than do those that are hardly working for the government. Now, does that mean that every teacher is a bum? No. No, but there are very few teachers that you would describe as working as hard as a private sector employee. If you're going to be in the private sector, you are going to be devoted to your job, and you are going to perform in that job, or you're going to be fired. In the public sector, you do not have to perform. You do not have to work hard. And the teachers' union is reprehensible, in my view, as was the as was Christie's inference, in that they pretend that money equals quality education, and that the money should be spent on them. That the more money that is paid to teachers, the higher the quality of education. That is their sole purpose for existence. Pay us more, give us better pensions, give us better health care, make it more difficult for you to interfere with us, give us fewer work days. Oh, in education, your child will be better educated. It's nonsense. As a matter of fact, if you do a comparison between the highest paid teacher salaries and the lowest scores on nationalized tests, you will find a direct and irrefutable correlation. The more you pay teachers, the worse the students perform.
And, yeah, I was just going to bring that up. That is how it correlates.
Yeah.
California has one of the higher teacher salaries, and they have some of the lower test scores.
Yeah, well, over $100,000 on average, and pathetic test scores. What's interesting also is the opposite is true. The districts and school systems that have the lowest average per capita teacher salary typically have the highest performance on test scores. So the inverse is mostly true, but the very argument that the teachers union makes that spending more on them will equate to a better education is absolutely and undeniably false. But what did Christie say? Did Christie just say that we ought not have any public unions, and that the teachers' union is absolutely and undeniably counterproductive? They are also hypocritical, pretending to care for the students when all they care about is how much money they make. No, he said, I think that we should, or that I should, smack them in the face. I want to smack the teachers' union in the face. Listen, that, on a 1 to 10 scale of a stupid way to approach this, that's a 10. You're already known as a hothead who can't control your emotions or your mouth, and you come out with a I want to smack the teachers' union in the face, inferring that violence would be the best way to communicate your dissatisfaction with their hypocrisy and performance? Come on, Christy.
Well, nobody ever said he was smart, and he has the tact of a hammer. I mean, he's not the most what's the word I'm looking for here? Suave, I guess.
No, graceful. No. You know, and you know, I think that Americans have this tendency to galvanize to, particularly in the primaries, where the more extreme you are, typically the better you do. And they have this tendency to bond with dunderheads.
Well, you can point to Trump, who's leading all the polls right now for the Republican
right.
Party.
Right. Who didn't even go to the last, if you want to call it, the debate. There was no debate. But, no, didn't even attend.
Yeah.
And the rest of them, I think there were 14 that were there. Can you imagine 14, they all get, what, a soundbite? Boy, that's the way to get to know somebody. I guess the only thing that scored points during the evening was Senator Lindsey Graham, who is I am vehemently opposed to, because his principal reason for announcing his candidacy was because America needed to build and increase the size of its military, and it needed to deploy its military more often and more aggressively. I mean, that is the very thing that has got us into the mess that we're in today, both financially and politically. I mean, it's been an unmitigated disaster. And to have somebody come out and say, we need to do more of the thing that has been the more ruinous of America's reputation and finances and freedom. Wow. So anyway, Lindsey Graham says, you know, you ought to pick me because of the fact I speak Clinton. I know and fully understand when Bill said during the Monica Lewinsky scandal that he did not have sex with that woman, that in fact he did. And he says, I know that when Hillary tells us, trust me, you'll have all the emails from my server that she is lying. And that's the reason you should pick him. Well, goodness. A plague on all of their houses. I mean, they may have one individual who is quasi-sane in the midst of them. That'd be Rand Paul. Ron Paul's, I think, son, right?
Yep, it's his son. Yep.
And, you know, I listened to what he had to say, or actually read what he had to say as a review. And, you know, he was reasonably articulate. His unfortunately, his views as a libertarian do not resonate with conservative, Christian, patriotic Republicans. Now, his was, you know, rather than reengaging and investing more American coin and blood in the Islamic world, we ought to withdraw. I mean, we are not making it better. We're making it worse. So, you know, to that degree, they had one candidate at least worth considering. Yesterday, I read with great dismay, because there had been very few governments that had universally responded more honorably, more appropriately over these past 4 or 5 years than Putin's Russia. Almost across the board, virtually on every issue, Putin was the most credible international head of state. So, yesterday it was with great dismay that I read that Lavrov, the foreign policy head for Russia, had a meeting in Qatar, I believe it was, with Hamas. And allowed Hamas to lie and say that Israelis were conducting terrorist attacks in the West Bank and Gaza. If you don't despise Hamas, if you don't think that the world would be vastly better if every Hamas leader and every Hamas jihadist were to disappear, be wiped off the planet tomorrow, and that the stain and the stigma and the consequence of Hamas be expunged from the earth, if you're not of those who realize that Hamas is a scourge, a deadly terrorist plague, and you meet with them and you extend a diplomatic welcome, then your moral capacity for judgment is nil. And for him to do that, he had to have the approval of Putin. So, Putin, what in the hell is wrong with you? Wake up. I understand that the United States is irking you, and you ought to be irked. You know, the United States announced just a week ago that it was now going to be training the Kiev regime's troops, of course, to attack ethnic Russians in the east. It was already providing all of their intelligence. It was already providing NATO equipment, and it was already funding their war against their own citizens. Also, they could create a new Cold War, this one active on Russia's border, and fight it in the Ukraine as opposed to, and fight it through a proxy in the Ukraine as opposed to fighting it in Vietnam. And that's all America has been about since the riots began that toppled the elected government in the Ukraine. But to try to work against, to push back against America by engaging Hamas, man, that's pathetic. And so it's with great sadness that I announce that Russia indeed met with them and has welcomed them for a second visit, this time in Moscow. Shame on you, Putin. You're better than that. Japan, on the other side of the pond, in fact two ponds away, said on Tuesday that it was suspending construction on a very contentious U.S. airbase on the island of Okinawa. And the reason they're doing so is because, the prime minister's political fortunes have turned, and he's looking for an issue that unites most all Japanese citizens, which is their disgust for the United States, and also the citizens of Okinawa, who felt the brunt of America during the invasion. Gee, it's so hard to imagine why there would be objections to having tens of thousands of U.S. troops and military on military installations, on occupying 18% of the Japanese island of Okinawa. And for those of you who say, we won the war, and so that's just, lump it. When you treat the victim, and it's hard to call Japan a victim in World War II. They were ruthless and aggressive and reprehensible in virtually every way. But when you treat the loser of a battle with such disdain that you're going to position your military in their midst, and keep in mind, there is this false, ridiculous notion that the best of America serves in the military. That's rubbish. The worst of America, not the worst. The worst of America is the deadbeats that are on the dole. Those that loiter outside of liquor stores. Those that don't work because they don't have enough character to work. Those that blame everybody but themselves for their sorry state. That have squandered their educational opportunities. That have squandered employment opportunities and simply live like parasites. That's the worst of America. But right above that would be the military. Because the military preys on those without hope, without a future. Those that they can convince that what they're doing is somehow good and noble. Can you imagine, though, the Japanese? That's the last thing they want. And when you impose yourself on a people like this, and you deliver your worst, and Japan has had so many bad examples of Americans raping Japanese women. It's the last thing they want. We're not welcome.
Well, it's no wonder that isn't their country the most xenophobic? of the entire world, pretty much.
Yeah.
Like, you are either Japanese or, okay,
you're scum.
Skeptical.
You know? Yeah, you're scum. Yeah, that's the Japanese way is arrogant, and it's flat out wrong. I mean, I've been to Japan a number of times. I've never been impressed with Japan. I have no desire ever to go back to Japan. You know, when I compare, for example, dealing with Taiwanese businessmen and women to Japanese, I will take the Taiwanese hands down every time. It's just no comparison in my view. But the reason I mention this is that America, your view of yourself and your military is wholly and completely inconsistent with the view that the rest of the world has of America and its military. Also, Scott and I were talking during the break about teachers. And I commented that between the teachers that I had, the teachers that my children had going up through school, I can probably name five that I was impressed with, that were devoted to the craft, that were good at what they did, that were committed to the education of their students. I can name five.
And I can probably guarantee you that of those five, probably never once mentioned money.
No. No, and of those five, only one was in public education. The rest were private schools. Now, on the other hand, during my business career, I could name 500 men and women who I was impressed with. Their character, their ability, their devotion, their intelligence, their drive. 500 to 5. And I will tell you that the lowest of those 500, I was vastly more impressed with than I was with the highest rated or the most impressive of the five who were teachers. There's not a single teacher that would make my top 500 list of people I'm impressed with. By the way, if I were to put together a list of the people I've been least impressed with, that would start and stop with politicians and religious pastors and priests. No, I don't think teachers would make my worst list either. China.
And religious teachers.
Oh, there we go. Well, there you go. China published weak economic news on Monday. And I want you to think about that. China's economy, when they switched from communal to free enterprise, has outgrown the rest of the world by leaps and bounds. They have gone from being outside of the top 10 with the largest population and the largest or second largest landmass and being mineral rich, particularly in rare earths. They have gone from outside the top 10 to the second largest economy in the world and the leading manufacturer of goods in the world. So when we talk about weak financial reporting out of China, we have to keep in mind that devastating financials in China would mean year-to-year growth in the 10% range, because they've been averaging well beyond that. You know, China has grown from the 10th largest manufacturer in the world to the largest manufacturer of goods in the world just in a decade's time. So anyway, a number of indices fell yesterday, including the U.S. dollar just plummeted, wilted, if you will. And the Canadian dollar also took a real hit yesterday, as did oil, all on speculation that China's robust growth was halted. And that's not the case. But the real damage yesterday, a 17% plunge, and doing so again today, our Athens-based Greece stocks, that no one is willing to wants to own a stock that is a company in Greece, because the the economic climate in Greece is that of a bankrupt country. Yesterday I mentioned, but I want to share the article, that the United States has decided to use airstrikes to defend Syrian rebels trained by U.S. military from any attacks, even if the enemies hail from forces loyal to Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. Wow. Can you imagine? Imagine that. That America is going to not only engage its close support aircraft, low flying, slow flying, vulnerable, particularly to missiles, which the Islamic State has lots of, as does the Syrian military. We're going to expose American, in fact, we're going to order them to fly missions over opposing troops from Syrian's military and over the Islamic State that is armed with some of the best of America's weapons. And we're going to do so in support of a group that has no chance whatsoever of success. The so-called moderate Syrian rebels that have been trained and equipped by the United States. So we're putting in a proxy here. Now, we originally had a proxy, but the proxy turned out to be al-Nusra, the Nusra Front, and the Nusra Front announced that they were fundamentally Islamic and that they had no interest in any notion of democracy. They were doing it to establish Sharia law, and they aligned themselves with Zawahiri, the head of what now is just a poster of Al-Qaeda. And then the rebels that were in conflict with al-Nusra turned out to be the Islamic State, who the United States created through the awakening programs that Petraeus had conceived. And so now you've got the United States going back to the well and say, okay, we'll find some more Muslims that we'll equip, and this group will be far more effective. And we're going to send them off to fight just everybody. They'll fight al-Nusra. They'll fight Assad's government troops. They'll fight the Islamic State. Just let them go after everybody. Well, not only that. Not only have we set them up so that they'll be the most despised people in Syria, these men whom we have somehow engaged with will be the enemy of everyone. They will find no quarter. There is not even a citizen in Syria that would harbor them. And now, in addition to that, we're going to fly close-in military support. This is like the United States saying the Vietnamization process that Nixon came up with, where we were going to arm and train South Vietnamese troops to go off and fight against a hardened, devoted foe in the Viet Cong, and that we were going to supply some air support for them. How'd that work out? How'd that work out? Well, in this case, the conditions make this even more foolish. It has a 0% chance of success. And all we're doing is squandering American money and will soon be squandering American blood because some of those aircraft will be shot down. Then what? Then what? And we're going to actually fly missions against Assad's troops? Who is the only credible force that is currently keeping the Islamic State from occupying southwestern Syria and therefore being on the precipice of invading Israel, which would garner them the enthusiastic support of Muslims worldwide? It's Assad's troops. That's it. And we're going to now run missions against them. We have been immune to Syrian anti-aircraft fire because we have refused to attack Syrian government troops. But now we're announcing that we're going to do that. in Syria? I wonder, really, if the President of the United States is sane. I mean, we know he's immoral. We know he's dishonest. We know he's incompetent. But I wonder if he's even sane. I mean, this is so preposterously stupid that you're going to risk American lives against the Syrian government, against al-Nusra, against the Islamic State, while your NATO ally is bombing the Kurds, all while you're arming the Shiite forces, the Iranian forces in Iraq. All because you invaded Iraq and gave Iraq to Iran and set off a religious civil war. That now you're going to resolve this by having American airmen fly close in support on behalf of a belligerent that no one will harbor and no one will accept, that have a 0% possibility of success against a very hardened foe, and not just one foe, but four foes. I wonder if he's sane. The decision by President Barack Obama-nator, which would deepen the U.S. role in the Syrian conflict, aims to shield a still fledgling. Why would they say still fledgling? Did they really think, is there anybody that writes for the Washington Post or the New York Times actually think there is one chance in a billion that moderate Muslims can prevail and that they will seek a democracy and that they will succeed over Assad, al-Nusra, the Kurds, the Shiites in Iran, and also against the Islamic State? And that when they do, that they will be so popular that they will establish a multicultural democracy, that there is an end game here that is worth the sacrifice of blood and coin? Is there anybody that actually believes that is a possibility? Still fledgling. Good grief. Anyway, fighters, that's the best way, I guess, to create peace and harmony is to have United States arm and train fighters to battle the Islamic State militants. But in Syria's messy civil war, it's a religious war, Sunni via Shia, the Islamic State is only one of the threats to U.S. recruits. The first batch of U.S. trained forces deployed in northern Syria came under fire Friday from other militants, triggering the first known U.S. airstrikes to support them. Against whom? U.S. officials speaking on condition of anonymity confirmed the details of the decision, first reported by the Wall Street Journal, and the United States would provide offensive strikes to support advances against Islamic State targets. We continue to ratchet up in a war that has no possibility whatsoever of success. The only guarantee that we have in Syria and Iraq is that we will continue to make a bad situation worse and leave nothing but a river of blood in our wake. This was an interesting story. We're going to switch continents. We're going to go to South America. And I was just stunned by this story because of how minimal the carnage is by comparison to a nation that gets a free pass on this sort of thing. Amnesty International says that Brazil's military police have been responsible for more than 1,500 deaths in the city of Rio de Janeiro in the past 5 years. 1,500 deaths in Rio de Janeiro, the most populous city in Brazil, over the last 5 years. Now, I don't want to make light of the fact that military police have killed 1,500 civilians. That's in one city. That's breathtakingly bad. And it's what the whole world should be expecting. The militaries of nations turned against the greatest threat to the elite of those nations, their own citizens. And that a domestic military police having killed more than 1,500 people in the last 5 years. But let me put this in perspective. In the United States, for the first 6 months of this year alone, police, this is excluding all federal agents, just police, have killed more than 600 civilians. Now, of those 600 civilians in the first 6 months of this year, so by the time this year is over, American police, excluding its military police and its military, excluding federal agents, will have killed as many as were killed in Brazil. Do you know how many of those police who killed civilians have been indicted, at least brought to trial? 4 of 6. Amnesty International says that it has found evidence that police killings were often illegal, with officers shooting suspects who had surrendered or had been wounded. Well, what do you think the percentage are of those 600 that U.S. police have killed that were illegal, with officers shooting suspects who were being agitated by the officer and shot without reason? I think of Tamir Rice. Every day that goes by with the Justice Department failing to prosecute the two officers responsible, particularly the one that killed him within 2 seconds of the time that he arrived on scene. Every moment that goes by without a trial and conviction of the murderer of Tamir Rice, the 12-year-old boy that was shot dead in the park for having a toy gun, is a further indictment that America has become a completely and totally immoral place.
Or what about Eric Garner, who tried to tell the cops, "I can't breathe"?
Eric Garner's the same thing. His crime was trying to break up a fight.
He broke up a fight, and then they tried to get him for selling cigarettes.
Yeah. And they killed him. Now, the mentally handicapped boy in Los Angeles that the police knew he was mentally handicapped and shot him anyway. I mean, we are so out of control. And you've got 4 out of 600 that are even being prosecuted for their crime.
And, you know, I still think that police officers should be held to a higher standard. I think that for them, it shouldn't be like a normal
right.
a citizen.
Right.
Where you're guilty or you're innocent until proven guilty. I think
right.
they should be. You're guilty of killing someone
right.
until you prove to me that you didn't.
Yeah, or that the situation left no other viable alternative.
Exactly.
Right.
And that's
if you're given your gun by the government and you are paid by the government to provide protection for the citizenry and you do the opposite, you kill a citizen, you ought to have to prove that what you did was the only viable alternative.
And
if you can't get any police that are willing to carry guns under those circumstances, so be it.
Well,
for the most part, they're counterproductive even now.
Well, then I guess they're going to have to learn some new skills besides shooting.
Yeah, oh boy.
So now maybe you're going to go back to doing what you're supposed to be doing
right.
and defusing situations and keeping
right.
things calm as opposed to getting into you have a taillight that's out.
Yeah. You know, in Britain, the police don't carry guns. And I'll tell you, I would far more readily walk down a dark street late at night in any English town than I would do so in the United States. Their police are not armed.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't like a gun as a tool. So I don't like, you know, oh, they don't carry guns. And
I realize that.
It's a tool, and they're using that tool 100% wrong.
But it's a deadly tool put in the hands of a county or city or federal agent who is essentially given a license to kill.
And the problem is it's in their training. It's in what they're doing.
Right.
They're pulling guys out of war zones, places where they're constantly. Look at how police have become. It's become like they're dealing with war zones.
Right.
You get pulled over, and it's an intense. It's scary. Your heart starts beating a little bit. It's not. It should be a simple thing of. Hello, officer. That's why you pulled me over. Oh, well, your tail light's out, and I just want to stop you, let you know that you should probably get that fixed, and you know.
There you go.
And there you go. You're on your way.
Right.
And that would actually be helpful. Oh,
right.
I didn't know my tail light was out. Well, thank you. You know. But no, now it's
First thing is license and registration.
Can I ask
proof?
You?
Yeah, proof of insurance. And they're cocky, they're condescending, and if you want to know, well, why'd you pull me over?
And the first thing that they should have to answer is, why did you pull me over?
Yeah,
I'll ask the questions here. Give me your license.
And by the way, they ought not be able to go any further than just provide the ticket for what they pulled the person over. They have, you know, this idea that they can agitate you to the point that you're resisting arrest and then charge you with a crime of resisting arrest when they had no right to arrest you in the first place. You know, the woman in Texas, thrown in jail for 3 days in a hellhole in Texas because she failed to indicate a lane change. And then was thrown in the pokey for resisting arrest by a belligerent officer? No way.